This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, thank you for staying tuned. I'm Xiaoning, and this is the Morning Run. It is now just gone past 7:18 in the morning. It's a Tuesday, the 22nd of December. And in about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Datin Noor Azima Abdul Rahim, who is the president of PAGE, on how COVID-19 is affecting the academic calendar, because we're also running a poll on Twitter this morning asking you, do you agree with the delayed reopening of schools? There are four options. Yes, safety first. No, kids are struggling. Not sure. I have no children. So let us know what you think. But in the meantime, we are turning our attention to the F&B sector because, as we know, commercial activities have picked up since the government eased restrictions under the latest CMCO announced earlier this month. A bit of a welcome respite to the ailing food and beverage sector, which had been suffering very much this year. Now, with many restaurants and eateries still facing much fewer footfall traffic and some of them still closed during the onset of the pandemic and subsequent movement restrictions, sentiments have since recovered and people are generally stepping out to patronize their favorite restaurants again. But for some, SOPs remain unclear and the threat of the virus is still very real. So how will 2021 look like for the food and beverage industry? So for more on this, we speak to Jennifer Ong, founder and CEO of Hapa Group. Now, Hapa is a company involved in publishing, events and training to support hospitality, F&B and tourism industry. Good morning, Jennifer. Let's start off right off the bat. How has the food and beverage sector performed this year? Given the pandemic and the economic fallout, have we seen a lot of restaurants close down?
Hi, morning. Yes, I think there have been thousands and thousands of restaurants that have closed down. And you're talking about, you know, when you talk about F&B, it's not just the restaurants, it's also the bars and the clubs and eateries like coffee shops and mamaks and catering companies. So there's been, you know, there has been some improvement of late where you see that there are some restaurants that have, you know, very high traffic, but you also have some which actually hasn't seen any improvement yet, you know, in that sort of sense. So I think if we want to say the overall performance this year, well, it's really bad. They've all been really badly hit and they've, you know, sort of dig deep into their pockets and some are still quite unclear. So, I know for a fact that, you know, in our Hapa group, there's been a lot of restaurants that have actually taken the shutting down option, and some have taken, of course, a temporary closed, but I don't think, you know, they will reopen anytime soon.
In the meantime, right, there's still SOPs in place, but was there any engagement with industry players on the best way to move forward? Because I do remember at the earlier part of the CMCO, they were rather strict. It was like two people per table, then it gradually became four, and I think now there are no longer restrictions. But was there any engagement with stakeholders like yourselves?
No. I think SOPs is one area that, I mean, I think the government themselves are not clear in the sense that different authorities saying different things. And I think the one that has got it really the worst are Chinese restaurants. That's why there are over 1,000 Chinese restaurants have closed down since March. Because, you know, their tables are for 10 and they have, you know, huge banquet halls as well. So they don't know whether they could sit more than four people and you know, whether they could actually accommodate more people on a larger table, right? But of course, lately there's been, you know, this SOP about you're allowed to accommodate the number of people according to the table size, you know, but still maintaining the 1 meter distancing. So I think restaurants today, they're just doing what they can, what they know. They're sort of given up already or finding out what exactly the clear SOP is. So they just do what it takes, you know, to survive, I guess, you know, when things are not clear enough for you, when there's no clarity, what do? You just do your best and you know, hopefully they don't come in and try to raid the place or come in and try and put a heavy fine on people.
And recently also, unfortunately, we've seen some restaurants having to close because some of their staff have got COVID-19. So I'm just curious, what kind of measures are there in place to also protect the workers? Is there continuous testing going on?
Yes, of course. You know, I think all F&B operators, you know, and hotel operators for that matter, all of them have to continue to do COVID tests for their employees. They have to, because if they don't protect their employees, you know, their business will be at stake because customers will not come. So the priority should be given to the employees first to make sure that they're all safe. You know, all the SOPs are done, the temperature checks and regular COVID tests has to be done. If they care enough for their business, then they have to care for their employees.
And meanwhile, we've also seen, I think, what is clearly a permanent shift towards food delivery as more people are working from home. And I think this trend will continue into 2021. Do you see more restaurants and eateries having to invest their resources to delivering food on their own? Or will some of the delivery platforms like GrabFood and Foodpanda continue to have a large share in this segment of the ecosystem?
Well, you know, I think if you were to ask all the F&B operators whether they would rather deliver food themselves than to go through platforms, because the platforms take a huge amount of commission, like up to 30%, right? Of course, every one of them would say yes. But the reality is that investment into food, into creating a food delivery platform, it's huge. Yeah, it's, you know, you're talking about, you know, do you have that enough of that cash flow to particularly invest in one, unless all the F&B guys come together and put their money into one particular platform and then they operate and they run it themselves. But I think, you know, food delivery for some it's not a very huge part of their revenue, could be about maybe 10-20%. For some, maybe, yes, they see an increase in food delivery, but I don't think it will be a major part of the revenue on a long-term basis. You know, of course, now it makes it really difficult because, you know, on one hand, we want people to go back out, dine, you know, have the confidence to go back out and dine again. On the other hand, you have all these messages coming through from different authorities. And of course, you know, the government is still encouraging people to stay at home. Like, you don't need to come out, you don't need to. So, you know, it's very confusing as well for people. I mean, do we go out and, you know, support the F&B industry so that it survives, or do we stay home? So, but if companies today can, as in F&B companies today, can look into investment in terms of a technology like an e-commerce platform where they can sell, if there are, you know, a restaurant that sells wines and food as well, they can actually have an e-commerce platform that sells wines and gift packs and stuff like that. So I think, you know, F&B guys have to be really creative now. They have to look into all ways. It's not just a typical dining and food delivery that will take you through this particular storm. I mean, you got to do more. You got to do things that you've never done before and look far ahead and see how else can you survive the business, you know.
Which is a related question I was just about to ask you, you know, who in this industry do you think will survive the pandemic? What will they have to do differently?
Well, I guess the Darwin's theory of evolution, right? The survival of the fittest has certainly applied to the F&B industry in 2020. I was just having a chat with, you know, some F&B guys yesterday, and, you know, all of them, the ones that I've spoken to yesterday, said, Jen, if we were to wait for government subsidy, we were to spend all our time fighting with the government and, you know, trying to get more, you know, more help, more assistance, you know, we would die even before 2021 hits us, you know, because we know there's not enough from the government for the F&B industry. So, you know, they got to look at things that, I think behavioral patterns of people is what they need to study. How are people behaving these days about dining in, about, you know, having food delivered, about, you know, having maybe chef on call at home, you know, in small groups. So because there's too many restrictions now, you know, about not having more than 10 people in a condo, while we're having 20 people. And, you know, people just get tired of, okay, what is it? If I can't go out, then I'll eat home. Right. But then some people don't want to cook. So I think if one of the things that one of the ways that I know that will bring a new market to F&B is look into e-commerce platform. Look at what else can you offer people, offer your diners an experience that they can not just have in your outlet, but also at home. So, you know, food delivery is, like I said, you know, it's actually a very small percentage of majority of the F&B businesses. So my take is if these F&B companies can come together and look at how else they can work as a team rather than as competitors, can they build a platform that can fight the existing delivery platforms in the market so that everyone gains? And, you know, co-sell, you know, co-brand, whatever it is. So look at things that people have never spoken about or thought about. And, you know, that might be, you know, might be a new survival kit for the F&B business.
Thank you for your time. That was Jennifer Ong, founder and CEO of Harper Group, which is a company involved in publishing events and training to support the hospitality, F&B and tourism industry. I thought it was very interesting her point that people or competitors should start seeing themselves as collaborators, perhaps coming up with shared products or shared services. Because, yeah, you need to pivot. You need to think of new ways to get your products out there. So it's not as simple as just, you know, doing e-commerce, for example, or just using Foodpanda or Grab. It's much more than that. And unfortunately, she's right. It's the Darwin theory, the survival of fittest, that will determine who can make it through and maybe even thrive in 2021. Up next, we'll be speaking to Ben Blen, director of the Lowy Institute on Indonesia's possible cabinet reshuffle. That's going to be happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.